taxes than carried interest loophole or capital gains taxes. What?
And they want to take back all the climate provisions from the IRA. That's how you destroy the economy. That's how you build it.
Congressman Sean Casten of Illinois, thank you.
I can't breathe. What have we become?
Listening to WGXC, Acra, Hudson, Catskill, 90.7 FM.
You can find out about so many local events, like the traditional Irish music session. Every Sunday, there's an open Irish music jam at the Shamrock House in East Durham from 2 to 5 p.m. Find out more on the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org. And add your own event to the WGXC community calendar and have it read on the radio at 90.7 FM by going to wgxc.org and clicking on the community calendar.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by the First Presbyterian Church of Hudson, a faith community open to all. Whether you are single, married, divorced, gay, wealthy, poor, or no habla inglés, if you are just browsing, just woke up, or just got out of jail, it doesn't matter if you work on Wall Street or if you sleep on Wall Street, you belong. We love soccer moms, crying babies, vegans, hipsters, seekers and doubters, tourists and locals. All are welcome. Services held Sunday mornings at 10:45 a.m. You can find us on the web at firstpreshudson.org.
Wavefarm's WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Rob Gellis of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
You are tuned to 90.7 FM, WGXC, hands-on, listener-supported radio for Greene and Columbia counties.
And in the tower they laid him, a was in an English prison that they laid him to his death. I'm dying for my country, he said with his last breath. They buried him in British soil, far from his native land. And the wild waves sing his requiem on the lonely Bannerstrand. They took Sir Roger home again in the year of 65, and with his comrades of 16, in peace and tranquilized, his last fond wish it is fulfilled, for to lie in his native land. And the waves will roll in peace again on the lonely Bannerstrand.
In Kilmainham jail in 1914, there were whispered rumors of a coming great war in Europe. Soon the catchphrase, "England's difficulty is Ireland's opportunity," rang through the dark corridors and re-echoed from the dreary cells. 2 years later came the rising of Easter week, and the flame of nationhood had been rekindled throughout Ireland.
As down the glen one Easter morn to a city fair rolled I, there armed lines of marching men in squadrons passed me by. No pipes did hum nor battle drum did sound its dread tattoo, but the Angelus bell or the Liffey swell rang out in the foggy dew. Right proudly high over Dublin town they hung out the flag of war. 'Twas better to die 'neath an Irish sky than at Suvla'r Suðulvar. And from the plains of Royal Meath strong men came hurrying through, while Britannia's sons with their long-range guns sailed in by the foggy dew. But the bravest fell and the sullen bell rang mournfully and clear. For those who died that Eastertide in the springtime of the year, and the world did gaze in deep amaze at those stout-hearted men but few, who bore the fight that freedom's light might shine through the foggy dew. T'was England bad or wild geese go that small nations might be free, but their lonely graves are by Suvla's wave on the fringe of the grey North Sea. Oh, had they died by Pierce's side or fought with Calibrew, their names we would keep where the Fenians sleep beneath the shroud of the foggy dew. Back to the glen I rode again, my heart with grief was sore,
For I parted with those valiant men I never would see no more. And to and fro in my dreams I'll go, and I'll kneel and pray for you. For slavery fled, O rebel dead, when you fell in the foggy dew.
For one heroic week in April
19... In the island of Ireland at Easter in 1916, some rebels decided they didn't need a king or a queen. They would once more try to cast off the British yoke or die like heroes in the Dublin rubble and smoke. There were soldiers, labour leaders and some socialists, poets, teachers, agitators and Countess Markovitz. Men like Plunkett, McDonough, McDermott and Clark, who on the trip of martyrdom were about to embark. In Jacob's Bakery, they created a rough compound and dug trenches for protective on St. Stephen's Ground. Also on the south side, St. Joseph's Hospital was occupied, and it was there that many brave men and women died. But as their headquarters, they picked the GPO as they marched in from Glasnevin and Phibsborough to meet up with Connolly and Kent and Pierce, who warned them the fighting would be cruel and fierce. As the Angelus rang, the proclamation was read, as they proudly remembered the brave Fenian dead. Then they defiantly raised our new tricolour flag and swore they would no more England be England's punching bag. Within the British Army, there was soon hue and cry as the bullets from the rebels in the GPO started to fly. Along with the men were brave women of Cumann na Mban, who stood shoulder to shoulder with rifles in the combat zone. In London, they couldn't believe those people so inferior could try to secede from England, a land so superior. Then a well-fed and trained army longing for a fight blew up buildings and killed innocent civilians just for spite. This was so much easier than to be in France facing Huns, for on O'Connell Street in Dublin there were no big guns. 1,600 Irish rebels of all ages and both gender faced 19,000 soldiers for a week before surrender. After the peace slowly returned, there was no more flying lead, but there were twice as many British soldiers as rebels dead. After the surrender, the British had ready cruel solutions, terrorised the population with quick trials and executions. Nobody was found innocent, and no appeals were allowed, as the rebels stood before them all with heads unbowed. Within 2 weeks, they had shed the finest Irish blood and broke all the laws of decency by burying them in mud. A man like Connolly was thrown into an unmarked grave. One of Ireland's greatest heroes treated no better than a knave. 1,000 years may come and go, and we will never forgive the ones who took the lives of men who had only one life to give. Those martyrs in history will be remembered for their sacrifice, but they were not the only Irish people who paid a high price. We should never forget the women, both girlfriends and wives, many of whom lived alone in near poverty for the rest of their lives. Good evening. I'm Tony Fallon. It's Easter 2023, and we do this in memory each year for the revolution that took place on Easter in 1916. We have some recorded music, and as you heard, I read a poem which I wrote about the uprising, and we have many great artists who will be performing here tonight. This next piece we're going to do is reading of the proclamation by Pádraig Pearse.
This is the proclamation issued to the people of Ireland by the leaders of the rising of 1916. It was roughly printed, and it was posted onto many walls in the city of Dublin on the morning of Easter Monday. Poblach na hÉireann, the Provisional Government of the Irish Republic, To the people of Ireland, Irish men and Irish women, in the name of God and of the dead generations from which she receives her old tradition of nationhood, Ireland, through us, summons her children to her flag and strikes for her freedom. Having organized and trained her manhood through her secret revolutionary organization, the Irish Republican Brotherhood, and through her open military organizations, the Irish Volunteers and the Irish Citizen Army, having patiently perfected her discipline, having resolutely waited for the right moment to reveal itself, she now seizes that moment and, supported by her exiled children in America and by gallant allies in Europe, but relying in the first on her own strength, she strikes in full confidence of victory. We declare the right of the people of Ireland to the ownership of Ireland and to the unfettered control of Irish destinies to be sovereign and indefeasible. The long usurpation of that right by a foreign people and government has not extinguished the right, nor can it ever be extinguished except by the destruction of the Irish people. In every generation, the Irish people have asserted their right to national freedom and sovereignty. 6 times during the past 300 years, they have asserted it in arms. Standing on that fundamental right and again asserting it in arms in the face of the world, we hereby proclaim the Irish Republic as a sovereign, independent state. And we pledge our lives and the lives of our comrades in arms to the cause of its freedom, of its welfare, and of its exaltation among the nations. The Irish Republic is entitled to and hereby claims the allegiance of every Irish man and Irish woman. The Republic guarantees religious and civil liberty, equal rights and equal opportunities to all its citizens, and declares its resolve to pursue the happiness and prosperity of the whole nation and of all its parts, cherishing all the children of the nation equally, and oblivious of the differences carefully fostered by an alien government which have divided a minority from the majority in the past. Until our arms have brought the opportune moment for the establishment of a permanent national government representative of the whole people of Ireland and elected by the suffrages of all her men and women, the provisional government hereby constituted will administer the civil and military affairs of the Republic in trust for the people. We place the cause of the Irish Republic under the protection of the Most High God, whose blessing we invoke upon our arms, and we pray that no one who serves that cause will dishonor it by cowardice, inhumanity, or rapine. In this supreme hour, the Irish nation must, by its valor and discipline, and by the readiness of its children to sacrifice themselves for the common good, prove itself worthy of the august destiny to which it is called. Signed on behalf of the Provisional Government, Thomas J. Clarke, Sean McDiarmada, Thomas McDonough, P. H. Pierce, Eamon Kent, James Connolly, Joseph Plunkett.
So on Easter Monday 1916, the war began. The Irish were in the GPO in Dublin on O'Connell Street and in a hospital in the south side and in numerous other places as well. And the fighting was very fierce, as they said, for at least 4 days. The British brought some ships up the Liffey and had some large guns on it. and battered buildings knocked down and killed many people. Many of the soldiers who came in on that ship thought they were going to France, and they were not told until they were already in Dublin that they were actually in Dublin. Many of those soldiers probably would have objected, since they were Irish themselves. Some of them were actually Irish soldiers, so Irish born, who were in the British Army, and others may have had their parents or grandparents from Ireland and would have been disappointed that they were going over to kill their own people. But the fight went on for, as we said, for about 4 or 5 days, and eventually it ended. But we have songs about some of the people who were involved, like James Connolly, and that's what we're going to do next. We're going to play you the song of James Connolly.
For one heroic week in April 1916, the might of England was held at bay by the Irish Volunteers and the Irish Citizen Army. Patrick Pearse, Commandant-General, Commander-in-Chief of the Forces of the Irish Republic, and President of the Provisional Government, read the proclamation of the Irish Republic outside the GPO, which was established as the insurgents' headquarters. Fierce fighting followed. Dublin was shelled and the centre of the city was set on fire. Once again, the oppressor's overwhelming military machine crushed the small Irish force of insurgents, and Kilmainham Jail stood ready to be fed its diet of victims. After the surrender, sentence of death was passed on 97 participants, including one woman, the Countess Markievicz. 14 faced the firing squads in Dublin, including the 7 signatories to the proclamation. Thomas Kent was shot in Cork, and Sir Roger Casement was hanged in London. The other sentenced prisoners were reprieved, together with members of Cumann na Mban and women who fought side by side with their men in the Citizen Army. It was in the infamous Stonebreaker's Yard that the 14 executions in Kilmainham took place, the last being the wounded James Connolly, who had to be strapped in a chair.
A great crowd had gathered outside of Kilmainham, with their heads uncovered, they knelt to the ground. For inside that grim prison lay a true Irish soldier, his life for his country about to lay down. He went to his death like a true son of Ireland, and the firing party bravely did face. When the order rang out, present arms fire, James Connolly fell into a ready-made grave. The black flag they hoisted, and gone was the man who loved Ireland so well. There was many a sad heart in Dublin that morning when they murdered James Connolly, the Irish Rebel. Many years have gone by since the Irish Rebellion, when the guns of Britannia they loudly did speak. But the bald IRA stood shoulder to shoulder as the blood from their bodies flowed down Sackville Street. The four courts of Dublin, the British bombarded, and the spirit
but above all that din came the cry, no surrender. 'Twas the voice of Jim Conley, the Irish rebel.
Grey Kilmainham Jail stood impervious to the happenings outside its walls. In 1918, the Irish people held a general election.
I am older than the old woman of Bear. Great my glory, I that bore Cuchulain the Valiant. Great my shame, my own children that sold their mother. I am Ireland. I am lonelier than the old woman of Bear. And here is the same poem in its own language. Misha Eire. Misha Eire. Shinnemen an Chalyach Bear. Moor Mogloy, Medruk Cuchulain Croge, Moor Manoir, Machlan Fain the Yeel Mair. Misha Eire, Wegne Men an Chalyach Bear. William Butler Yeats, who died in 1939, was Ireland's greatest poet in the English language. He was a patriot too, and many of his poems were filled with what in Irish is called Chir Ra, the love of country. He was filled too with a sense of the past, and remembering the penal days when the name of Ireland was forbidden to be spoken in song or ballad, he made this poem in honor of his country and of the poet Hanrahan, and he used one of the names of Ireland's secret love. Read Hanrahan's song about Ireland. The old brown thorn trees break in two high over common strand, under a bitter black wind that blows from the left hand. Our courage breaks like an old tree in a black wind and dies. But we have hidden in our hearts the flame out of the eyes of Kathleen, the daughter of Houlihan. The wind has bundled up the clouds high over Knocknarea and thrown the thunder on the stones for all that Maeve can say. Angers that are like noisy clouds have set our hearts abeat, but we have all bent low and low and kissed the quiet feet of Kathleen, the daughter of Houlihan. The yellow pool has overflowed high up on Clothnabair, for the wet winds are blowing out of the clinging air. Like heavy flooded waters, our bodies and our blood, but purer than a tall candle before the holy rood, is Kathleen, the daughter of Houlihan. Yeats celebrated the insurrection of 1916 in many songs. Here are two of them. Easter 1916. I have met them at close of day, coming with vivid faces from counter or desk among grey 18th century houses. I have passed with a nod of the head or polite meaningless words, or have lingered a while and said polite meaningless words, and thought before I had done of a mocking tale or a jibe to please a companion around the fire at the club, being certain that they and I but lived where motley is worn. All changed, changed utterly. A terrible beauty is born. That woman's days were spent in ignorant goodwill, her nights in argument until her voice grew shrill. What voice more sweet than hers when young and beautiful she rode to harriers? This man had kept a school and rode our winged horse. This other, his helper and friend, was coming into his force. He might have won fame in the end. So sensitive his nature seemed, so daring and sweet his thought. This other man I had dreamed, a drunken, vainglorious lout. He had done most bitter wrong to some who are near my heart. Yet I number him in the song. He too has resigned his part in the casual comedy. He too has been changed in his turn, transformed utterly. A terrible beauty. Hearts with one purpose alone through summer and winter seem enchanted to a stone to trouble the living stream. The horse that comes from the road, the rider, the birds that range from cloud to tumbling cloud, minute by minute they change. A shadow of cloud on the stream changes minute by minute. A horse hoof slides on the brim and a horse plashes within it, where long-legged moorhens dive and hens to moorcocks call. Minute by minute they live, the stones in the midst of all. Too long a sacrifice can make a stone of the heart. Oh, when may it suffice? That is heaven's part. Our part to murmur name upon name, as a mother names her child when sleep at last has come on limbs that had run wild. What is it but nightfall? No, no. Not night, but death. Was it needless death after all? For England may keep faith for all that is done and said. We know their dream, enough to know they dreamed and are dead. And what if excess of love bewildered them till they died? I write it out in a verse. MacDonagh and MacBride and Connolly and Pierce, now and in time to be wherever green is worn are changed. Changed utterly, a terrible beauty is born. The Rose Tree. Oh, words are lightly spoken, said Pierce to Connolly. Maybe a breath of politic words has withered our rose tree, or maybe but a wind that blows across the bitter sea. It needs to be but watered, James Connolly replied, to make the green come out again and spread on every side and shake the blossom from the bud to be the garden's pride. But where can we draw water, said Pierce to Connolly, when all the wells are parched away? Oh, plain as plain can be, there's nothing but our own red blood can make a right rose tree.
When the fighting ended in Dublin, most people assumed that the war was over, but it really wasn't. It continued. They had the black and tans who came to Ireland. You had the fighting on the streets of Dublin all the way from 1916 on to 1920. There were young men dying and there were young men fighting. And then eventually a peace, or a kind of a peace, was created when England gave 26 counties back to the Republic and it became the Republic of Ireland. But the six counties in the north became the six counties and still are the six counties. So then, of course, we had the terrible Civil War where some of the greatest men of Irish history who fought together to get rid of the English now fought amongst each other and killed each other. some great men who would have, the country would have benefited so much from if they had lived. So what we're doing is playing the music that has been created around that whole era. It lasted a whole six, the four-day war lasted for 6 years. And eventually there was still animosity amongst the Irish, among themselves, for many, many, many years. And I remember when I was growing up in Ireland, if we asked our parents about 1916, they were reluctant to talk about it because they had been born in that particular era. And there were still people who were angry at each other because whichever side they were in the Civil War. So that that 4 or 5 day war went on longer in the minds of the Irish people than 4 or 5 days. So as I said, we're going to play the songs of that particular era and about the revolution and so on. So I hope you enjoy the rest of the program.
Prison conditions in the crowded Kilmainham jail greatly deteriorated as the cells were filled to overflowing. On the 14th of March 1921, IRA prisoners were removed from Kilmainham to be hanged in Mountjoy. They were Thomas Whelan, Patrick Moran, Thomas Bryan, Patrick Doyle, Frank Flood and Bernard Ryan. The brutal conditions within the jail, which were equally applied to a patriot Capuchin priest, Father Dominic, became worse following the dramatic escape on 14th of February 1921 of Simon Donnelly, Frank Teeling and Ernie O'Malley. There was no cessation of the guerrilla activities and the death rate, both inside and outside the prison, continued.
I had a true love of every girl.
July 1921, England sought a ceasefire, and during the truce, many prisoners were released from Kilmainham, and the balance of the Republican prisoners were freed after the treaty was signed and approved. But Kilmainham jail was to have a further part to play in consonance with its dastardly history. The terms of the treaty insisted on by perfidious Albion involved the partition of the country, by which 6 of the 9 counties of historic Ulster were retained under British rule. In consequence, a tragic civil war occurred in Ireland in 1922-1923. Former comrades fought each other, and in Kilmainham jail on 17th of November 1922, 4 soldiers of the anti-treaty forces were executed by firing squad. They were James Fisher, John Gaffney, Peter Cassidy, Richard Tuig. 5 others who were also prisoners in the jail were executed on the 8th of January 1923. They were Terence Brady, Leo Dowling, Sylvester Heaney, Anthony O'Reilly, Lawrence Sheehy. Kilmainham Jail continued its Bastille-like incarceration of political prisoners, and for a period it was exclusively used to detain members of Cumann na mBan and other women who aided the anti-treaty forces. Inevitably, it carried manifold memories of the tragic civil war, memories which are best treated without rancor or malice. Nevertheless, the close on 140 years of its use as a prison must have given its walls and dungeons manifest evidence of man's inhumanity to his fellow man. We can never forget its place in our history, from the agonies of Henry Joy McCracken, the terrors of Anne Devlin, the christening of William Smith O'Brien's infant son, the marriage of Joseph Mary Plunkett to Grace Plunkett on the eve of his execution, the daring invincibles, the 1916 martyrs, and the unrecorded sufferings of less-known inmates. From all these, we have lessons of history to learn, ideals to espouse, and principles of patriotism to uphold. The last prisoner to be released from Kilmainham Jail on the 16th of July, 1924, was Eamon de Valera, later to become President of the Republic of Ireland. By acquiring a knowledge of the story of Kilmainham Jail, and by our appreciation of the lessons taught by the sacrifices and sufferings of the patriots held within its walls, we can become attuned to the age-old fight for Ireland's freedom and play a part in furthering the aims and ideals of our long-dead, but not forgotten, patriots and heroes.